The most trusted and longest running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
On this Thursday afternoon with Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We have a lot coming your way today. We look forward to catching up with our good friend Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch as he covers the St. Louis Cardinals and was covering the Cardinals when everything went on hold in the sports world, which, hard to believe, is now 3 weeks ago. But Ben will join us a little bit later this hour. Hour number two, we start by talking college football with Brett McMurphy, longtime friend of the program. Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears, he'll join us at 4:35 for Slap Shots. Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com will be along for his weekly visit in hour number three, and we will have once again our trivia challenge with the Sports Fix at six as a golden attaboy hangs in the balance, and we look forward to catching up with VFL Andre Lipsius of the Detroit Tigers organization. Had a couple of opportunities to Jimmy work with the Major League club during spring training before that got shut down, but also did a great thing as he donated footwear to the Tennessee baseball program this past season, and I'm sure we'll like to get his thoughts on what the season was like for the Vols, as well as his twin brother, Luke Lipsius. But look forward to catching up with Andre in hour number four. But we have that and more today on Sports Talk.
Yeah, we are loaded today, so we'll jump to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. So I think the note about Derrick Henry is pretty interesting. The Titans have signed him to a tender of $10.2 million, but they still want a long-term deal with him. I think they're going to get there with him. And I would argue that in the NFL, right now, he is one of the three most valuable running backs to his team. Ezekiel Elliott, Dallas; Christian McCaffrey, Carolina. John, I'm not sure if there's another running back I think is more important to his team at this point.
I would agree. I don't think the Titans come close to where they were this past season without Derrick Henry leading the way. So I think that when you look at some teams devaluing the running back position, I think the Titans would be very wise to sign him up long term.
I do too. All right, a couple of other notes out there. The British Open has been canceled the first time since World War II. This is an event that goes back to 1860. It was scheduled to be played at Royal St. George. What's interesting is the 150th British Open next year is scheduled to be played at the famed St. Andrews. So, are they going to play the British Open next year at St. Andrews? Are they going to move Royal St. George into that spot or move Royal St. George into a later date? That had not been determined. At least, I didn't see it determined yet. And the Royal and Ancient, which is the governing body for golf in Europe, they are going to collect insurance. I don't know how much, but they've got insurance for the postponement of the cancellation of the tournament. So they will recoup some money there. The match between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, which might also include Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, it needs PGA approval, and I have not seen yet where the PGA has approved it. I'm not really sure if I understand why the PGA Tour has to approve it, but they are trying to put this together for charity. They're looking at sometime in May to do this. Hopefully they'll pull it off. I think it will be, I think it'll get a ton of viewership. While we're on golf, I'll touch on this. The Knoxville Pro-Am Series, which has been very popular over the last few years, they have extended that suspension through May the 17th. Through May 17th. Yes, there are a lot of golf courses that are open, but the Pro-Am Series has decided they're not going to conduct those. And so now several of them have rescheduled. The Cherokee Country Club has moved theirs to June the 8th, Oak Ridge Country Club to July 20th, Tennessee National to July 27th. Those that have been canceled, Country Club of Morristown, Wind River, and Gatlinburg Country Club, they will not play those. New England Patriots are flying 1.2 million masks from China to the United States. I've seen United States, I've seen to Massachusetts. Of course, that's the same thing, but I think it's more designated for the Boston area. But that's a neat deal that they're doing. So I'm glad to see that they were able to work something out in that regard. I also saw, John, where there's a Texas Ranger player who is going to give $1,000 to each Ranger minor leaguer. There are about 190 players in the Rangers organization. That's about $190,000 then that he's going to hand out. But I think that's a neat gesture by, I guess his name is Cho, C-H-O-O. That he's going to do. Yeah. So I think that's that's Chen. I saw C-H-O-O. I'm not sure.
Shin Chu Chu. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Chu Chu.
No, his name
Choo-choo.
Is Shin Chin Chu. Yeah.
All right, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. For further reference, he'll be
that.
Named. And, we'll call him Chu.
Yes. But and then also, as you mentioned, Robert Kraft doing what he's doing. He not only are they going to be distributed in Massachusetts, but he's also picked up part of that gross that'll be designated for New York. So he's helping out
good.
Two states in the Northeast that are in sore need of big supplies. But well done, Robert Kraft.
Yep. A few other notes out there. I thought this was really interesting, and I was watching ESPN where Mike Tannenbaum, who used to be in the front office in the NFL for a long time, said it is too risky to take Tua Tagovailoa in the top 10 of the draft. The others on there said, nope, it's not too risky. In fact, one of them said, he agreed, he said, it's a risky decision. It's risky if you take him because of the injury situation. It's also risky if you don't. What if he turns out to be a great NFL quarterback and you didn't take this guy? And others argued that, well, why are people talking about trading up to get this guy if it's too risky to take him in the top 10? He had Tua, by the way, the last 2 years, 76 touchdown passes. And I would say in limited duty, right? A lot of times he didn't play in the fourth quarter, and then he had injuries. 9 interceptions. He also has the Alabama school record for 87 career touchdown passes. If he is taken in the first round, he would be the second Alabama quarterback since the merger to go in the first round. Richard Todd was the number 6 pick of the Jets in 1976. Thought that was an interesting note. The Wade Trophy, which goes to the outstanding female player, goes to Inescu for the second year in a row. She is also on the All-America team, selected by the Women's Basketball Association. Two SEC players making that team, Tyesha Harris at South Carolina, and then Kennedy Carter with Texas A&M. Also with the John Wooden Award on the women's side, Inescu, along with Harris and Ryan Howard, are in the top 5 finalists for the National Player of the Year on the John Wooden Award list. On the men's side, you've got Azubuike, you got Obi Toppin, you got Luke Garza, Marcus Howard. Those are among the finalists for the award on the men's side. Also, Tom Izzo has created a little bit of a stir here. I read a story the other day about a Michigan State player that he had kicked off the team or suspended for alleged sexual misconduct, sexual assault. And I read the story, and it's pretty, well, it's very graphic and disturbing to read what happened, if indeed the reports are accurate. Well, Izzo contacted the witness or the alleged victim before she was contacted by law enforcement. And that's a no-no. But anyway, he did talk to the woman about made the allegations, and that could potentially put them in a situation where the U.S. Department of Education is going to be on their case a little bit about that. But not a good move by Izzo. I understand that he might have only been seeking information, but that's better to let authorities do that, not you as the coach. Also, athletic directors are bracing for a financial crisis. 60% of those surveyed said that they have great concern and that they think that they will have at least a 20% drop in revenue based on the previous year. So we will see what happens with that. A lot of folks concerned about the financial implications, and that obviously extends beyond college athletics. A lot of people are worried about that. A couple of basketball notes. Washington center Isaiah Stewart, who played against Tennessee. Tennessee beat Washington in men's basketball earlier this season. He's entered the NBA draft. Ohio State center Caleb Wesson also is declared for the NBA draft. LSU's athletic director said the Will Wade's job status is unchanged even after the HBO documentary was aired recently. They've stood behind Wade, and it'll be interesting to see how much longer they will or if they can stand behind him. I thought this note was interesting. So if you go back to when the NCAA tournament started seeding teams, which was 1979, only two teams have won a national championship without a McDonald's All-American on their team: Maryland in 2002, Connecticut in 2014. Interesting note there. We've talked about a number of events being canceled. The British Open coming out with that. Yesterday it was Wimbledon. There have been more than 30 pro tennis tournaments that have been canceled due to the coronavirus situation. I thought this was interesting. I was watching an interview with Dr. Marshall Leonard. He works in the Northeast. He's a former soccer player. He's been treating the coronavirus victims. He said that, make no mistake about it, doctors, nurses, the people in the medical profession, we miss sports. So he said, I encourage all athletes to stay in shape, because when you return to play, we want to watch you. We need sports. So make sure you're ready to go. Make sure you're in shape. Oregon gets a quarterback transfer from Boston College. His name is Anthony Brown. He's a grad transfer. He'll be able to play right away. Also, this note also struck me. The most years between your first and second NCAA basketball championship, 17 years is the record. Rick Pitino went 17 years before winning at Kentucky and Louisville. And Muffet McGraw went 17 years between her first and second national championships at Notre Dame. Branch McCracken, who coached at Indiana, went 13 years. And Dean Smith went 11 years. He won his first one in 1982, his second one in 1993. I thought that was an interesting note. Just a couple of NFL notes. Now, Jadeveon Clowney has lowered his asking price from $20 million to about $17 to $18 million. I'm not sure that's going to do him a whole lot of good with somebody signing. We'll see. The NFL Players Association says that Eric Reed's claims that the language changed in the CBA agreement are, quote, completely false, and, quote, there is no substantive difference, close quote, in the language of the contract. Thought that was interesting. Dallas has taken a chance. They have signed a defensive lineman, Aldon Smith, to a one-year, $4 million deal. He came out and started in the NFL with an absolute tremendous performance there. He had 33.5 sacks in his first 2 years. That's more than Reggie White had in his first 2 years in the NFL. Smith, however, had issues with substance abuse. I think he had other issues as well. He has been out of football for 4 years. He has applied for reinstatement to the NFL. We will see if he gets it. One of the reasons he liked Dallas is because when he was with San Francisco, his defensive line coach was named Tom Sula. Tom Sula is now the defensive line coach for the Dallas Cowboys. So there was a tie in right there. The Chargers have indicated that in the driver's seat for the quarterback position, Tyrod Taylor. John, do you think Taylor can get it done for the Chargers? I know you're going to say, I hope not, but do you think he can get it done for the Chargers?
Well, I think he's proven to be a very capable quarterback when he's able to stay healthy, and it comes down to whether or not the Chargers can protect him, which they struggled to do last year with Phillip Rivers. So I do think it would be a step down, but I also think that he's somebody who has proven he can win a starting job before, has done so with two other teams. And so for that reason, I think he can manage the club. I just wonder if they can keep him healthy.
Yep, that's going to be a key for him. Another note, and I don't want to dive too deep into this. We'll get into this a little later, but I was reading a story about athletic departments that have had the most payout in the amount of money to football and men's basketball coaches. And they went back 15 years, but in some instances, they only had records that went back 7 years. So Tennessee, in 7 years, they're one of those, has paid out $20.2 million for football and men's basketball coaches. And even though it only goes back 7 years, that's one of the top five figures when compared to schools going back 15 years. That is not a good sign. But Tennessee, having paid out $20.2 million, they have also paid out an average of $2.88 million in those 7 years, which is also not a good sign. That is by far the most of any school in the country. Auburn is next at $2.4 million, and nobody else is at $2 million a year over that time frame. So I don't know if I'd call dreadful, some numbers that would not make Tennessee fans or those around the Tennessee Athletic Department very happy. That's an indication that you made some hires that didn't work out and you had to make some significant payouts. But Tennessee leading the way in a category that you do not want to lead. Those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. To join us today, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The king of beer, the king of sports. Live from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk rolls on with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900.
A couple of other notes to pass along. The PGA has canceled its senior championship. That was set from May 21 to 24. It's unlikely any pro tournament is going to be played before June. So that one is out the window. And how about this? Tom Brady has rented Derek Jeter's 30,000-square-foot waterfront mansion in Tampa. So I guess he'll need all that room to throw passes inside to Antonio Brown, maybe?
Maybe so. That could be the only place that Brown finds a job.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll say this. You know, you always need a place for your stuff. 30,000 square feet. It sits on three lots on what's called Bahama Circle, and it's a short drive to the Bucks facility. 7 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, as well as entertainment and billiards rooms. It has an 8-foot security gate, 2 feet higher than the city permits. But Jeter received an exemption for privacy. Imagine that.
Yeah, well, I wonder where Jeter's going to stay. Apparently he could stay in one of the rooms there, right?
Sure enough.
There's plenty of space. My goodness.
Let's see. Yeah, I just wonder if the whole Brady family will stay in one room and then the other six will get a Super Bowl trophy.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Tuck it in bed along with some Thin Mints. Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, must be nice if you can do that. Of course, Tony, a 30,000-square-foot mansion, I guess, is pretty neat too. This is
And I will say this: Derek Jeter, I'm sure, will give them a nice, beautiful basket to welcome them to the home. But Jeter's also very good with baskets when those parties leave as well.
Yes. Yes, he is. Oh boy. And by the way, I mentioned the name of Antonio Brown. He's been working out with Lamar Jackson, the Ravens quarterback, the MVP. And Antonio Brown, his cousin, Marquez Brown, is a receiver for the Ravens. I don't know if that's part of the hookup or the reasoning, but I thought that was pretty interesting to see that development with Lamar Jackson throwing to Antonio Brown. I just wonder who might take a chance on Brown again. He's kind of like a cat. It's almost like he's run out of lies. Maybe he's not like a cat anymore. But I think he's run out of a lot of opportunities. And then, of course, he's got to get in the good graces of the NFL, which may not be easy for him to do. So we'll see what transpires with that. But, gosh, there's no question he's one of the best receivers in the NFL and was for a number of years. If he can just get his act together, we shall see.
Yeah, no question at all in regards to the talent and the ability. Simply an unbelievably athletic football player. And he would be, I think, Jimmy, in line for a Hall of Fame consideration, but just such a lost cause off the field.
Well, there's a lot of baggage that he brings. And if you've got Bruce Arians basically telling Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, we're not bringing this guy in here, that's mm-hmm. pretty strong. And maybe somebody else would give him a shot. We'll see. But it's hard to trust him because, I mean, he had a good situation, I thought, with the Raiders. and Gruden. And Gruden bent over backwards to try to help the guy out. And that didn't work. So he goes to New England, I guess, for about a week. And then there's some things that evolved that were unknown. And so the Patriots say, okay, we're not putting up with that. But he just can't seem to stay out of his own way. He can't seem to stay out of trouble. And I know that at times he sounds like he's humbled, but that might only last for 24 hours. You just never know with this guy. So it's kind of a shame the way he has messed up his career in the NFL. I'll say this. I wouldn't be shocked, though, if he plays again. It may not be for very long with some team, but I think there's a chance he might find a home, at least briefly.
Yeah, I do think that there's a very good chance he'll get another opportunity. But my goodness, I would imagine he would be given a very straight and narrow path with which he can operate. And who knows, he might make the absolute most, because I don't wish any ill will on the gentleman, simply for the fact that I think, as you've said as well, this is somebody who clearly has needed some help, has created a really hard path for himself. And I just hope he gets to an area where there's peace.
That's the first step to me. He's got to agree to go get professional help. And there's nothing wrong with that. There are a lot of people that I bet you there are a whole bunch of people in the NFL that get professional help, and we just don't know about it. But there's nothing wrong with it. And hopefully he will go in that direction if he doesn't let his ego and his pride get in the way. And if he does and kind of straightens himself out, I think he could still be one of the best receivers in the NFL. Certainly Tom Brady thought that, right? Because he was battling for him. So, but maybe he'll do that, and I hope that he does, because I think he's still got a lot more very productive years in the NFL.
I agree as well. That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. When we return, we look forward to catching up with our good friend, Bed Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and it is indeed a pleasure to say hello to our good friend Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. Ben, how are you?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm doing well. I think as well as can be expected in this current time. So healthy, and family and friends are healthy. So that's the most important thing, and that's good news.
That is good news, and you happen to have quite a few family members and friends that are right there kind of on the front line in the medical profession, right?
I do, yeah. My wife works for a hospital, kind of in their marketing and PR side, but she's on their kind of task force for coronavirus, and my dad's a doctor, and my mother-in-law is a nurse, and my father-in-law is a doctor. So compared to what they're doing, sitting at home and trying to get coaches and players to pick up the phone to do an interview, it doesn't seem very heroic, but I'm trying to do my part by not going anywhere and kind of, finding stuff to do around the house. So, but you're right. A lot of people are showing their bravery, man. I mean, not everybody gets to hide out from this. A lot of people have to go fight it and face it. So my hat's off to those folks.
Well, certainly wish them the very best and appreciate all of theirs, as well as everyone in that walk, their efforts through this very serious situation. But Ben, were you in spring training? Were you at spring training covering the Cardinals when the curtain came down?
I was, yeah. I mean, we kind of watched it all unfold, real time from the Cardinals complex there in Jupiter, Florida. And, you know, initially, you know, the big story was that the baseball teams were going to, you know, not allow media members in the clubhouse anymore. And there were a lot of folks who got honked off about that. And I was kind of trying to say, look, if this helps, you know, so be it. Hopefully it's temporary. But, you know, it was very clear even then, if you were following kind of the news side of this, that wasn't going to do much good. And really the thing that was going to stop eventually, if we were going to get serious about trying to slow this down, would be the crowds. And I thought baseball was slower. I mean, they were slower to react and act than a lot of the leagues. Now, they have not had a player test positive that we know of yet. It's probably a matter of time. But when the NBA had Rudy Gobert, obviously things shuttered immediately. The NHL is so closely tied with the NBA that they knew that that was going to have to be next. But baseball was continuing to play these Grapefruit League games, and up to the point that the morning that the Florida governor said, hey, we don't want to have crowds more than, I think it was 200 at the time, it's since gotten smaller. There were still six games that were played in Florida that day before baseball finally figured out it was going to, you know, cancel the rest of spring training. So initially they said, hey, we're going to leave the place open. Guys are going to be able to work out in unofficial ways. And even since then, they have shuttered it, and that's when we knew it was time to come home. So 16-hour drive home, and I've been at the house ever since.
Ben, this is Jimmy Himes. Good to hear your voice again.
Hey, you too, Jimmy. Good to be with you guys.
I wanted to ask you about the impact of the Missouri football team, and I wonder if you think that it might hurt them more than some other programs because they've got a new coach, a new staff, new defensive coordinator, trying to break in a new quarterback. Do you think this could retard the progress of the Missouri football team?
Yes, I think out of all the teams that I cover, that this is going to hurt in terms of, you know, obviously they're all going to suffer in terms of financing and budgets and all that stuff. But in terms of actual on-the-field product, I think it will hurt the Missouri football team the most for the reasons that you mentioned. Now, they do have their defensive coordinator back in Ryan Walters, but in terms of head coach with Eli Drinkwitz, brand new, you know, the language that he's going to be speaking in terms of his offense, and he will call the plays, they have not had a chance to get that, you know, where they would like to have it. I think the best case scenario if you're a college football program is to have a returning head coach and two returning coordinators, and preferably with some seniors and juniors who have been around long enough to get it. For Eli Drinkwitz, his first move coming in was to basically bring in a new staff for the most part. There are some returning guys. We mentioned Walters, but for the most part, he also tore up the depth chart and said, look, we're going to evaluate and figure out where we want guys and in what order. They don't have a returning quarterback with Kelly Bryant gone. So I think this is so much unknown for them. And then you factor in the fact that there was going to be a lot to sort out if things were normal. So I think it does hurt them quite a bit.
Is Drinkwitz's offensive style considerably different than what Missouri has done in recent years?
I don't think it'll be... You know, I think it will be somewhat similar. I mean, he likes to score a ton of points. He wants to go fast, but not tempo for the sake of tempo. And he should have some athletes that can do that, similar to what Dooley was doing with the offense that Josh Heupel left behind. But as you guys know, and, you know, the language is different. You know, that every coach has his own verbiage for things that he wants. And we know that Eli Drinkwitz, his bread and butter is his offense. And that's the reason he's been hired at Missouri, is because of his ability to put points on the board and score and put up big numbers. So he's going to have, you know, a glossary of terms and things that he wants his players to know. And right now the closest they can come to getting that is through, you know, these Zoom calls that teams are doing, or, you know, these blast texts that they're sending out. But in terms of workouts, in terms of actually getting in a room and going over stuff, it's not an option. So I think that's going to be a weakness for teams that are in this position. Missouri is obviously not the only one, but you're lucky if you're dealing with a coach that's been around a few years, because guys aren't going to be starting from scratch later than expected.
This could be the second year in a row that Missouri starts a quarterback who was a transfer. Kelly Bryant, now Sean Robinson, transfer from TCU. Does he have much competition? Is it Robinson's job, or is there somebody else that could beat him out?
Well, I think ideally it's Robinson's job, and if it's not, then I think Missouri could be in trouble. They've got, you know, an incoming freshman from the St. Louis area. I mean, all of these guys are going to be, you know, unproven, but I think that's why Sean Robinson is here, is he saw an opportunity to sit out last year and then start immediately, you know, behind Kelly Bryant. But, you know, if there is competition there, then I don't know that it speaks very well for the way that's going to go. I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, some significant turnover, and also just a lot of guys that we haven't really seen. So I'm sure Sean Robinson has not been told that, hey, you're the starting quarterback. But if he doesn't turn out to be, you know, then they could have trouble. Taylor Powell is still on the roster. You know, he has played some because Sean Robinson had to sit out last year. And then Connor Bozalek is the redshirt freshman who, you know, there were people wondering last year if maybe he should have gotten more chance. So I'm sure they'll call it a competition, but if I had to bet, I think it will be Robinson when football comes back, I guess, if it comes back, we should say, this year.
What was it like to see Missouri reach all the way to Knoxville to grab South Doyle's Elijah Young?
Well, I think you're going to see some more of that under Drinkwitz. One of the things I think he's done a good job of is he knows what his offense is. He knows how to call it, so he doesn't need to go. He didn't need to waste, I don't think, hires for coaching purposes as much as he wanted to prioritize recruiting. And we've seen him make some hires that tie back to his days when he was basically a low man on the totem pole at Auburn. And he went back and got some of this staff together that has both reach across the country, but also, you know, some significant SEC name brand. And I think that's a really smart thing to do. Missouri has to do a better job of recruiting kind of that SEC footprint of, you know, can't let, you know, the SEC powerhouses get everybody. So I think that he will have some more wins along those lines. And I think another thing that he's going to have to do, and he should do, is get back into Texas. Some of Missouri's best players have come out of Texas. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, the previous staffs had kind of gotten away from there when they shifted to the SEC. I think that was a mistake, and I think they're going to tap into that. They've hired Bush Hamden, who was obviously out in Washington, and then the other hire that they have made was the former TCU co-offensive coordinator Curtis Looper, who is a very established recruiter who is going to, I think, have some a little more swagger, a little more name recognition when he walks in that door. So I do think recruiting could improve under Drinkwitz. That should be something that fans should expect.
Has Drinkwitz been well received by the Missouri fans?
Yes, his energy is well received. I mean, he, in some ways, guys, it kind of reminds me of watching the Butch Jones effect in Knoxville. Now, Eli Drinkwitz does not have the recruiting success that Butch had right out of the gate. He's going to need a little more time, I think, to start landing those 4 and 5 stars. If he can get there, we'll see. But you remember kind of the energy and the Butchisms that became very popular early on in Knoxville before, of course, they soured. Now, that's the way this works. If you're the energy guy and the social media king and you're moving and shaking and putting videos up of you celebrating a commitment every time you get one, people love it if you win. If you don't win, then it starts to look like a gimmick. So while he's played, you know, coach no games, we have to wait to see if he's got those chops. But the energy that he's brought, I think, was needed, and I think it has been well received. He's on Twitter, he's on Instagram, and that stuff matters. I mean, that's where the players are, that's where the recruits are. So I think that splash that he's been willing to make has been well received by the fans.
Ben, were you surprised that Barry Odom got fired, given that Missouri had that NCAA cloud about postseason play? You didn't know what was going to happen, and they did go 6-6. Were you surprised he got fired after that?
You know, I really wasn't, Jimmy, because I think it was going to become one of those situations where it was as much about the rears and seats than the record. It was kind of the energy was really flagging around the program in terms of the fan base. And I think ultimately sometimes those decisions are made for a school. You kind of had the sense that Barry Odom knew he was going to be on his way out when he entered that final game of the season. You could just see in his demeanor, you could see in his just the way he was carrying himself, it changed. And there was a clear kind of tension that was developing between Barry Odom and Jim Stirk, the athletic director. You know, you'll remember that Jim Stirk didn't hire Barry Odom. He inherited him from the Mac Rhodes promotion before Mac Rhodes, the then AD, went to Baylor, which at the time looked like jumping from one disaster zone to an even worse one. It's worked out for Mac Rhodes. It seemed to be a wise move now. But Odom never really, I don't think, got the commitment publicly from Jim Stirk that he was looking for, and I think that kind of soured things over the course of that season as stress is built up. And I think Jim Stirk knew that if you have a program in the SEC that's not, you know, moving the needle, if you have one that's not putting people in the stadium, then as an AD, your really only option is to go out and make the hire that you're going to hang your hat on. So that was kind of the backstory there. And, you know, the NCAA stuff was, I think, you know, something that Barry's supporters used to say, hey, is this fair? And that's a valid question. But one thing that was probably worked against Barry was he went out of his way to talk about what a big deal it wasn't going to be. So then it was hard for him to use that as a talking point as things gotten sour. And really, big picture-wise, what it came down to is there was a few things. He didn't do a good enough job of getting some of these players from in the state to stay. That's always been what Mizzou has to do. You've got to get the good players in the state to stick around because you're not going to pull the best players out of other states. And the other thing was this, is that that was supposed to be their marquee team. I mean, I think everybody expected the team to take a step back this upcoming season, but this was supposed to be the showcase year. You know, they went and got Kelly Bryant, which was supposed to keep things moving after Drew Locke. They had a ton of guys back on offense. They had a returning defensive coordinator. Derek Dooley had been around. I mean, there was really no excuse for the team to show some of the mistakes that it showed. It was undisciplined often. It let some really, really unlosable games get away from them. And it was kind of the story of, you know, Missouri could win the games it was supposed to, but it could never reach up and win one that it wasn't. And then it had a bad habit of dropping games that you had considered to be automatic wins. So 3 years of that, and people were pretty disenchanted. So I think Jim Stirk felt like he had to go get his guy.
Is Konzo Martin in trouble?
Well, he needs to win more games, and he needs to recruit better. I think that's fair to say for sure. In terms of being fired, I would say no, and I'll point to his contract, and that's in some ways tied to Drinkwitz. Both of these coaches that Jim Stirk has hired, so Konzo was Jim Stirk's hire, and Drinkwitz is as well. Both of them have contracts that are very generous in terms of time, have basically said the programs were at a point where the administration acknowledged that it was going to take some time to build back up. Konzo could not have been fired last season. It was actually in his contract because he went to the NCAA tournament in his first year. He was more or less unfireable by the contract that was written in because he had been to a tournament unless it was for something for cause, you know, like he was caught doing something, you know, against the rules or something like that, which that's not really Konzo's MO. Now, he can be let go. The buyout kicks in after would be kicking after this season, but he'd still be owed like $6 million, which I don't think Missouri is going to pay $6 million to a basketball coach to not coach, especially when we're looking at some pretty significant financial ramifications of a potential delay of the football season. They're just not financially in a position to do that. So Konzo had a great first year. He has been significantly better than what Missouri had. I mean, you got to remember, the Tigers were the least competitive Power 5 team in the country for 3 years before he got there. But it is the time where he needs to now start getting them back on that linear path, and they've got to have some guys develop, and he's got to go out and get a grad transfer, too, that can really help this team take a step forward next year.
Ben Fredrickson joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. Ben, running out of time for this hour, but just a quick question with a piece that you wrote today about Gary Pinkel and his scholarship foundation. How is Coach doing?
He's good. I mean, now this is a kind of the kind of cancer that Gary has. It's not one that's ever going to be away, and he makes that clear. There's some confusion about that, his type of lymphoma, but he gets check-ins, he gets treatments, he's in a good place with it, and he is very fired up about this GP Made Foundation, where just today, it's less than a year old, the foundation, they're donating or announcing the gift of 25 scholarships to seniors who are going to be going off to different colleges and tech schools around Missouri. So he's filling his kind of his void that was created by, you know, no longer coaching with this project, and he's pouring his passion into it. So he's doing well and making a difference, and it's just cool to see him be so fulfilled by this.
That is great to hear. How was Lane Thomas doing in spring training?
Hey, there it was. I figured it was coming. he's good, guys. Look, here, you know the deal, and we've talked about it before. If it was on another team, I think he'd be the starting outfielder by now, somewhere in the outfield. He's in a crowded system, and the Cardinals are pointing to both him and a young man named Tyler O'Neill as the guys who are going to have the first crack at the left field position come this season. He had a good spring. He slugged 563 this spring. I mean, he hit three home runs in limited at-bats and was coming on strong right before it was canceled. So he wasn't going away in that battle. I think he will make the major league team to start the season. He might be their fourth outfielder, but I do think, I personally would probably like his upside more than Tyler O'Neill, who's a big power, high strikeout guy. I think Lane is a more complete player. I think he's a more athletic player. So it might be the Cards are stacked him against him a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's a starter before things are over. The other thing is, quickly here, Dylan Carlson is a guy the Cardinals have coming up in their system that they really like, and he's going to start in Memphis probably because of service time. But when he comes up, then it's going to be a discussion about whether Lane Dylan and perhaps even Tyler O'Neill should be playing over returning starters like Harrison Bader or Dexter Fowler. So it's still very crowded, but he's done everything right, and I think he's going to get a shot to kind of get his foot in the door and keep it there some point this season if we can get it going.
We will get you back on to talk more about Major League Baseball and the Cards specifically, but the last question is, have you adopted Adam Wainwright's approach in staying ready, staying healthy by sweating to the oldies?
No, I was taking long walks around my neighborhood and feeling pretty good about myself, and then I see this stuff that these athletes are doing, and I think, okay, well, I'm not an athlete. And then I get on Facebook, and all the guys I played high school football with are doing this 50 push-up challenge. So I'm making fun of them, and then I try to do it myself and nearly break my nose on the floor. So, I'm just going to stick to my walks, guys.
Well, Ben, we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us today. Look forward to catching up with you again very soon. You can follow him on Twitter, @Ben_Fred. You can listen to him. He's got it all going on. So we sure do appreciate it. Stay well. Be safe.
You bet, guys. Yeah, take care of yourselves. And anytime, one phone call away.
Thank you so much. That's Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We'll get a break. A final segment to hour number one of Sports Talk is next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Tell the truth. Isn't this better than hearing Boston's More Than a Feeling for the 10,000th time? 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Great to catch up with Ben Fredrickson. And, Jimmy, we come back essentially to say so long, but we look forward to catching up next with Brett McMurphy.
Yeah, Brett McMurphy of the stadium, he did a survey with athletic directors talking about whether or not they thought we would have a football season in the fall, and if not, what's the impact? We look forward to visiting with him about that.
And just a quick note for you, Jimmy, Ben Fredrickson via text says, tell Hyams I thought his tweets about the food were hilarious.
Oh, yes. Gumbo. That's how I'm... Most people are wondering what I'm doing. I'm eating gumbo every day.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Hour number two of Sports Talk is next. It starts with Brett McMurphy on 99.1 The Sports Animal.